card comes.
Which is Mulholland versus Marion County Election Board. Mr. Falk?
We've lost our audience.
You're not as popular
not
as...
We shifted from the Northern District to the Southern District, and suddenly...
Okay, you can go ahead, Mr.
Thank
Clark.
You. May it please the Court. In 2003, following a detailed preliminary injunction decision by then-District Judge Tinder, which highlighted the unconstitutionality of Indiana's anti-slating statute, the Marion County Election Board, who was the defendant in the case, entered into an agreed judgment that the statute was facially unconstitutional. Nevertheless, on primary day in 2012, the board, without notice, found that Mr. Mulholland had violated the statute and ordered his election materials seized. He proceeded to file a lawsuit now stayed in state court seeking damages for this unlawful seizure and also seeking an injunction against use of the statute against him when he ran in the future to produce these slates. The board's response was to set an investigatory hearing for December of 2012 where it would invite and hear from all interested persons concerning the election materials and their seizure and ordered that Mr. Mulholland be subpoenaed to the hearing. Before that subpoena was issued, he filed a case in federal court, which sought two things. Number one, to enjoin the board from subpoenaing him to the investigatory proceeding and to prevent the board from taking any adverse actions against him for his past violation of the statute, which he admits he did violate. And number two, again, enjoining the board from enforcing the statute in the future. The trial court abstained on the grounds of Younger abstention, and this is erroneous. It is true, of course, that the federal action, like the state action, seeks to enjoin the board from enforcing the statute in the future.
Well, if the district judge dismissed the suit, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Yeah. So if it were reinstated, what happens then? Would it be stayed until the administrative proceeding is completed, or what?
The state court lawsuit has been stayed, and of course we are arguing that.
I mean, so what would be so what would happen with the federal suit?
We would proceed with our two claims. One asking for an injunction.
But how can you proceed? Don't you have to wait until this election board proceeding is conducted?
Well, no, Your Honor, because the election board proceeding is not a civil enforcement proceeding.
That's the violation as far as you're concerned.
Yes, Your Honor. And also we have the separate relief, which is asking
No, I'm not talking about Younger. I'm just saying if the federal proceeding is reinstated,
yes, sir.
We agree with you about that Younger is inapplicable, wouldn't the federal court still have to wait until the administrative process in the state administrative process was complete?
No, Your Honor. The planned hearing was an investigatory hearing. Investigatory hearings are not enforcement proceedings for purposes of Younger. That's why
you're not listening to me.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
I said forget Younger.
Yes, Your Honor.
I'm assuming Younger is inapplicable.
Yes, Your Honor.
The federal suit is reinstated. But even when you have a federal suit, obviously, when there are parallel state proceedings, often the federal court will grant a stay, right? It's not getting rid of the case, not renouncing jurisdiction. It's staying the federal proceeding because there are relevant state proceedings. So I'm asking whether it would be appropriate for the federal proceeding to be stayed to await the completion of these administrative proceedings.
It's our position, Your Honor, that the administrative proceeding itself is a First Amendment violation because the board is administering and investigating a violation of a statute which is facially unconstitutional. So we would argue the federal court could certainly stay, but we would argue that stay would be inappropriate because that proceeding is entitled to no deference, whether we call that Younger or something else. So
Mr. Falk, there are several complications here, and maybe I could try to sort them out a little bit.
Thank you.
First of all, I don't understand why you guys filed suit in state court. That seems to be an unnecessary complication, but it doesn't justify Younger abstention. Okay, that much seems clear to me. With respect to the injunction you're seeking against the administrative hearing that the Marion County Election Board wants to hold, presumably the board could have an interest in some other topics.
Yes, sir.
Beyond just the slating statute, right?
That's
and I
right.
take it, do you have an objection to their investigation of other issues?
No, Your Honor.
Okay, so it's just the slating statute that you're worried about. Okay. Can I ask you, this is a constitutional challenge to a statute on the books. I saw the Attorney General was involved in the earlier case, but the Attorney General is not involved in this case?
We did notify the Attorney General as required by federal law.
That's what that's where I was going. So.
And the Attorney General made no appearance in the case.
Okay.
I think the Attorney General probably thought the statute had been declared unconstitutional.
Does the county election board have any power to impose a penalty or other coercive remedy for election law violations, or does it have to go through an AG, the AG or a prosecutor?
The AG or the prosecutor's office, which is why another reason why this is clearly not a civil enforcement proceeding. It's an investigation.
Okay. One other question that does come up here, in light of some of the points that the election board raised, accusing your client, in essence, of having misrepresented to voters his affiliation with other candidates. Does the First Amendment protect misrepresentations about affiliations and endorsements?
Well, of course, our client denies that he did that.
Okay.
And I think I'm not aware of any specific case on point, Your Honor. I think there is obviously some play with regard to the First Amendment, especially in the election context. But I would point out that the notice that the board issued concerning the December investigatory hearing seemed to be focused almost entirely on the issue of election materials, and that is the statute that has been declared unconstitutional. And therefore, we believe the court erred in abstaining both in terms of that hearing and in terms of the parallel proceeding with regard to the state.
Well, we know there's not a First Amendment right to lie about a company's finances. There is a First Amendment right to lie about your military honors. It's a somewhat complicated area. So
that's correct.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Fall. Mr. Babb?
May it please the court, opposing counsel. Your Honor, I take it from some of the introductory comments that maybe trying to convince the court that Younger abstention applies might be difficult right here, but I'll give it a shot. I do believe that this case is appropriate in the spirit of comedy to avoid interference with an ongoing state administrative proceeding. One thing that we didn't really make clear, and let me talk about that state administrative proceeding. We agree with the district court that the election board's May 8th order constitutes an enforcement action. One thing I don't think we did a good job of explaining in the brief was, if you look, and this would be on the supplemental appendix, page 27, in paragraph 24 of their state court complaint, they have actually appealed that. That state court process right now is actually an appeal of that administrative action. And I do agree with Mr. Falk that ultimately the election board cannot penalize him. They would have to refer the matter to the prosecuting attorney or the attorney general. But they certainly do. It looks to me, this is the process that Indiana has set up. They have a subpoena powers. They have the ability to go to the courts to force subpoena powers. In this particular situation, one of the reasons...
When are they going to have their hearing?
It's a good question, Your Honor. Contextually, what happened was, this thing happened so quickly on the election day that they issued this order.
Right, right.
He filed his complaint. One of the things that he complains about, he didn't have an opportunity to be heard. That's what this is. And I will also tell you that in the context of an appeal, the election board is not subject to AOPA, which essentially would say that the facts that were presented prior to the appeal are closed. The election, an appeal of an election board to a circuit court, in this case the Superior Court, is more like a Board of Zoning Appeals process. And what you can do is you can actually go back and supplement the record with facts. The purpose of this hearing is to go back and find out not only what happened with respect to these election materials, but as you noted, Judge Hamilton, also with respect to other violations.
Yeah. Mr. Babb, whether these proceedings are judicial in nature is an interesting and I think somewhat subtle question here. But there's a younger exception, as you know, for extraordinary circumstances. I guess my question is, if not here, where we have a consent judgment declaring this statute facially unconstitutional, if that's not extraordinary circumstances, what would be?
Your Honor,
because,
I think...
And let me just elaborate for a moment, which is I fully appreciate the interest that both major parties have in enforcing slating discipline in Marion County. It applies to the judges in the state court. It applies to a number of other elected officials. Given the absence of any constitutional defense to the law, the consent judgment, and so on, this frankly looks a lot like harassment.
Well, Your Honor, I think the answer to the question, which is a good one, Mr. Falk poses it in his reply brief. If not this case, then what case? And I think the answer to that is the Rosa case that he talks about, which is the loitering case. There you had a situation where it was not a preliminary injunction that was issued, not on the merits. It was a final judgment on the merits. It was affirmed by a circuit court. And then also that state court had weighed in on it and said, this is clearly unconstitutional. He talks about in the La Preferida case that consent judgments can in fact be binding, have collateral estoppel-like effect if the parties could have reasonably foreseen the preclusive effect. Your Honor, I agree that there's an inherent inconsistency between facially unconstitutional, but oh, by the way, you're only going to be prevented from applying it against the Ogden plaintiffs.
You're in a very tough spot.
We are.
I mean, it can't be facially unconstitutional only as to Mr. Ogden. And I understand maybe, you know, the board has turned over. Maybe you want to refight that battle. But you can do that in federal court as well as in state court.
You can, Your Honor, but in this particular situation, though, and I agree, if we find there are exceptional circumstances, then younger abstention would not apply. I do believe, though, that if you look, and it's hard to understand what it took a hardworking magistrate and Judge Tinder, who's now on this court, what sort of dynamics were in play and compromises were made to ultimately reach that consent judgment. But at the end of the day, it clearly says that it's only applicable to those folks.
It doesn't look like much of a compromise to me. It looks like a surrender. There are cases where, I take it if the U.S. Supreme Court had held this law unconstitutional, you would agree that this would be extraordinary circumstances, right? In fact, where the state gives up the defense of its law, I would think that the unconstitutionality is even clearer.
Yeah, Your Honor, I think one thing, if you look at this case and if you look at Ogden, the real problem in the Ogden case is, and I think that this really was the sort of core of Judge Tinder's analysis, it didn't even look like a ballot. If you look at the beginning of that case, one of the interpretations that the government argued for is that, look, it talks about it's a sample ballot, something that appears like a sample ballot or a listing of names. Judge Tinder was troubled with the listing of names, which in that Ogden case just dealt with Mr. Ogden, who was running for clerk, and McAtee, who was running for sheriff. He said, this doesn't even look like a ballot. The government comes up and says, but you have to interpret those listing of names consistent with that it looks like a ballot. I think that if the case was maybe referred to the Indiana Supreme Court or gone up to this court, we might have a different situation. In this case, it clearly does look like a ballot. It's very different than what Ogden was. And I would say that if that's the court's position, then there isn't really much that we can do about it. But I do believe...
We're here to listen.
What's that?
We're here to listen.
Younger was about not interfering with state criminal proceedings, right? That's the core of Younger. Why wouldn't a perfectly good alternative be let them have their lawsuit, but the judge can decide to stay it if he thinks this election board proceeding would be really illuminating? Wouldn't that take care of everyone's problems?
Stay the federal lawsuit, Your Honor.
Yeah.
I believe that would probably be acceptable. I haven't talked about that with the clients, but I can also tell you that that would assume that they also couldn't prevent him from coming to the hearing.
That what?
That they would not be able to then, if you stay the federal lawsuit, then you're saying the district court could still prevent the board from subpoenaing Mr. Mulholland to the fact-finding hearing?
Wait, I'm lost. The election board does have subpoena power.
They do, Your Honor.
And so what would be the problem with getting him to testify?
Well, they're asking the district court to prevent that from happening.
Why?
If Mr. Falk's argument essentially is one of futility, there's no reason for you to go there. Because
well, that's for the board to decide, sure.
Your Honor, I agree. I think a stay of the federal action while the state process would allow it to proceed, that seems to me, having not thought about it before, but like a reasonable alternative.
But isn't that younger abstention, though, isn't it?
Well, Your Honor, younger abstention would be dismissal of the federal action, and you would stay the federal action if you didn't have an opportunity to raise your damages claims.
Why does younger abstention, why does it have to be dismissal? So if you take the standard case where of younger abstention because there is a pending state criminal proceeding, depending on how this state criminal proceeding ends, it may be perfectly appropriate for a federal proceeding to continue. So why not? I mean, suppose the federal case charges malicious prosecution, groundless prosecution, and so the federal suit is stayed while the prosecution goes forward. And suppose in the end the person is acquitted, it's determined there was malicious prosecution, then the federal suit can resume. There's no reason to have a dismissal and then have statute of limitations problems. So why is it different here? I think if it's important to hear from him, if the election board thinks they ought to hear from him, I think, yeah, to hear from him. If he refuses to attend, I mean, that may cast a lot of doubt on his case. That would be fine. So,
Your Honor, I see that, Mark, can I answer that?
Okay.
Your Honor, in that scenario, though, and perhaps Mr. Falk, I'm sure, would also be interested in hearing this. If we stayed the federal action and we moved through the state court action, would the hearing be allowed to go forward, the fact-finding hearing, and then would the state lawsuit then be allowed to proceed forward?
Well, that's a puzzle. I don't understand why he brought a state court suit, and I am bothered by his. Is it just these two suits, or has he brought other suits?
I think this is the only one, Your Honor. But the state court proceeding has also proceeded a long way. There was immediately a motion for summary judgment filed. Once the opposition to the motions for summary judgment was filed, which again put in the evidence that we talked about in the brief of appellee, and I don't mean to take the position that those are established facts. Mm-hmm. Those are clearly going to be disputed facts. But as Judge Hamilton noted, those are the sort of facts that might lead to other election law violations. And so,
I would think that would be a good reason. I mean, what's odd about Younger, there's always been a principle that if you have pending parallel proceedings, it makes sense to stay one. And that's routine if they're in the same court system, both federal, both state. And when it's one federal, one state, probably the principle should be the same with recognition of certain differences, especially the criminal. So I would think it would be an open question whether you wanted the state court to go first, if as you say, it's more advanced. Well, it must be more advanced than the federal.
It is, Your Honor. It's much more advanced.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr.
Thank you, Your Honor.
And Mr. Falk?
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honors, we filed the state court case because I, and it was me, honestly thought this was akin to a small claims action.
I thought that...
I'm sorry?
I thought
it was akin to a small claims action. I thought we would file this. Mr. Mulholland was out money because they'd seized his election materials. I assumed that once everyone saw that this law had been agreed to as being facially unconstitutional, that would be the end of it. When it turned out that that was not the end of it and we were faced with a investigatory proceeding in state court, we filed our federal action. I realize it's awkward and ungainly, and it is true, however, that the Supreme Court has recognized most recently in Sprint Communications that there's nothing wrong with having parallel proceedings, but that's why we're in two courts. And for that, it's my fault entirely, and I apologize.
But you'd rather be in federal court at this point?
I would rather be in federal court, and we certainly will pursue the future injunction claim in federal court regardless of what happens with this proceeding. But our concern with the proceeding is that it appears to be not a fact-finding proceeding. It appears to be investigating at least primarily violation of a law that has been, everyone has agreed, is facially unconstitutional. That seems to be an additional First Amendment problem.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Mr. Falk and Mr. Babb. The next case.